Types are fascinating patterns that are best discovered holistically.
Welcome to Beyond Personality Types, the original InterStrengths podcast. Every week, we provide you with the better ways to use and talk about personality theories. I am your host, Olivier Caudron, a self-discovery facilitator. With me is Dr. Linda Behrens, internationally renowned for her innovative typology approach. Come with us beyond the indicator results to rethink what you know about personality types. Are you ready to move beyond simply handing out personality test results and start truly unveiling what lies beneath the surface of your clients and yourself? Hello, and thank you for tuning in. In today's episode of Beyond Personality Types, we're diving deep into the differences between the well-known Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, MBTI, and the InterStrengths approach. If you're searching for tools, stories, and new frameworks to enhance the way you talk about and use personality type theories, this episode will expand your perspective and empower you to support others with greater accuracy and depth. Let's see how this comparison will help us go beyond personality type. Nowadays, the MBTI stays one of the most known and used. Far from tests and other indicators, there is the InterStrengths approach. It offers another way to unveil a personality. What is this other way? What does one get more from it? What are the differences between the two? Linda, if you're ready, without further ado, let's start the comparison.
Well, I'm just really excited about this word you used, unveil, because that's what we're doing. It's personality patterns are there, and we're removing the veil that hides ourselves from ourselves, as well as ourselves from others. Well, I like that.
Good.
So, well, this is a big topic here, dear to my heart. I started out learning about temperament first and more holistically about their four patterns and the ways they become dysfunctional. And then, oh, and by the way, here's what they look like when they're functional. What David Kersey did was describe those four patterns. And then we took the Myers-Briggs type indicator to find out which one fit us. I took it, scored INTP, but 1 point INFP. In those days, we didn't know a whole lot about it. They had some descriptions for each of the 16 type patterns, and I did relate to both descriptions. The Myers-Briggs was becoming more and more popular. We're talking about 1980.
Mm-hmm.
I was in this community, the Association for Psychological Type, that was all built around the Myers-Briggs itself. Sometimes people had to point out that it was the Association for Psychological Type, not the Association for the Myers-Briggs, because there seemed to be a lot of confusion.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
And in those days, we took the instrument, but it means we gave it to people and pretty much assumed that that was what fit them. Then I started doing MBTI qualifying programs. They didn't want to do a certification, but they did a qualifying, which meant that we taught the tests and measures requirements for it to be a psychological test. In other words, you had to be a psychologist or have had certain courses in order to purchase that instrument. It was such a popular thing. It just spread like wildfire. I was always using temperament with it. The more I learned about each of the 16 types, the more I discovered that the results someone reported might not agree with what was really their best fit. So this whole concept of best fit came into popularity. I was working on ways to help people figure out what their best fit was. As I was doing these qualifying programs, people would come in, they had taken the instrument, got some results, and they reported where they fit.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, write that down on a piece of paper and put it in the back of your notebook. We're not taking it away from you, but we're going to do something else. In the very beginning, we were going by that and then putting people into groups. Meaningful thing happened to me in this one early on. It was one of the very early workshops I did. A woman, I think her name was Andrea, came up to the front of the room and said, I have to sit up here because I get in trouble all the time. I said, no, I don't mind if you get up and move around. And I kind of figured she had SP preferences, or what I now call the improviser pattern. Then we put people into groups. She said her pattern was ESTJ. That's what she said her type was. I said, well, have you ever looked at ESTP? And she said, no. And I just let it go at that. So she goes to the group with the people with the SJ pattern, and they were doing the report out. She was reporting out. And there were the people in this SP group, well, I would call it improviser, but the group that was clustered SP, who said, was Andrea the main person? Well, yeah, we kind of let her talk. It was just before the lunch break. And so I said, why don't you take a look at this description of ESTP? She goes off to lunch, comes back, and right after lunch, those with ESTP preferences were supposed to present their pattern to the group. She was the only one. She read it, resonated with it, pulled it off, and told the funniest story about what she was like that fit that pattern. And that was a big wake-up call that the instrument is not always accurate. It's not only the Myers-Briggs that's not accurate. It's all self-report instruments have measurement error. One of the things about the Myers-Briggs is that it does have a lot of research behind it, you know, where the data of reliability means, does it do the same thing every time? Its reliability scores were pretty good. The funny thing is, if we've had an interpretation before the retake, it may have been skewed to answer the same way. But I think some of the good research didn't do that. There's validity, which is it measuring what it says it measures? Mm-hmm. And notice it's called measures. This is an indicator, which was hard to get across. It's really an indicator of what your preferences might be. But that got lost because it looked like a test. It smelled like a test. It was analyzed like a test. It was reported in numbers. So people, at least in Western culture, tend to believe it is a test. And I think that's probably fairly universal. There's a right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
We had to overcome that. There's no right or wrong. My results are my results. I started to notice, and I wish I had collect data, but I didn't. But my gut sense of all of the Myers-Briggs programs I did over the years, about 40% of the people came in and changed their mind during or after the class. It might be one letter, an extroverted or an introverted version. Or it might be the whole thing, like this woman in the class. What happened with Andrea was that we didn't have a test to give people for temperament. We explained the four temperaments, had them try them on, and see what fit. Mm-hmm. But because we did that after she was given her results, and we related it to the results, we didn't use names, for example. We would talk about SJ, SP, etc., that would bias people. You know, you don't want to have failed the test. So it's kind of like, well, that's what I reported. We started doing self-discovery, and we would portray each of the four patterns. We had graphics, animated graphics, stars, house, tree, and books. So we had these symbols that represented the patterns. The characteristics came up, and I would tell stories. I would spend at least 10 minutes describing each of the four patterns, and we would ask people to try them on. Which one do you think fits you? And we gave them note-taking pages about what fits me, what fits people I know. Once they figured out what they related to, then we put them into temperament or essential motivators is what I call it now, groups, and gave them an activity to see if they related. Create an ad is one of those that we use. You could see the differences. And we told people, if you're sorting between two, you can leave the group. We gave them lots of opportunity to change and change their minds and try these on. And I use the shoe shopping analogy all the time. And you go in and you try on a whole shoe. You don't try on just the sole. The idea is that it should feel like you. It should fit like a good shoe. We encouraged people to get feedback from other people. During these programs, they were 5, 6 day programs, people would call their parents and say, let me read this to you. What do you think fits me? And they would get feedback from people who knew them well. They got feedback from the people in the group. That is how this self-discovery process evolved. It was instrument assisted because we gave the instrument, we would give the instrument and then integrate the results later because we're using essential motivator names. And then later we used interaction styles and we would do those two lenses before we put the type code to it.
Was it your goal to confirm the results of the test, or your purpose at that time was already to build another way to unveil a personality?
The purpose after those early experiences wasn't to confirm the instrument results. That's just a data point. In my framing and setup, we're going to do a lot of activities. We're going to be collecting lots of data points. Your instrument results is one of those. And there were about 8 or 10 data points we described on this graphic. It wasn't to confirm. It was to verify the best fit pattern using multiple data points, using different lenses. Each lens or model gives different kinds of information, and they all match and line up.
It is what differentiates InterStrengths approach from other personality tests.
Yeah, there were some other people who used similar techniques. Those days, qualifying programs had different methodologies.
Mm-hmm.
The MBTI Myers-Briggs company has their own training, and I haven't been in it, so I don't know how they're doing it. The instrument itself is not intended to stand alone. That's why you have to be certified or educationally qualified to purchase it. The standards are pretty high for that, and you have to demonstrate knowing the limits of such tests or personality assessments.
We have access to all those tests online. Talking about the MBTI is not the official indicator, but the name appears somehow. What you just said is important because the official Myers-Briggs type indicator is more than those 90-something questions. You should work with someone after getting the results and have a conversation.
And there's a whole bunch of ethical practices that are taught. You don't do test and tell. You don't use it for hiring or firing or any kind of selection. There are a variety of other ethical principles that are applied to using personality instruments. It is an instrument. It's an assessment. Those of us in the field try not to call it that. We call it an indicator. Isabel Myers named it an indicator just for that purpose. It was to indicate what the likely best fit is.
Okay. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Some of the instruments online claim to, well, there's part of it is the framing, how well it's set up, what kind of mindset people are in. And then there's the explanation. And then there is the verifying process, what fits you. In my view, it's very important to make that what fits you piece just as meaty as the what does it mean piece. And that verifying process involves an openness. I've had people take our training because they couldn't figure out their best fit. Part of it is because they were looking at the processes and that's all. They weren't looking at patterns and themes, but still they could go through the 10-week course, haven't figured out. Mm-hmm. And they're still sorting, and they had other issues they had to deal with. Culture's one of those variables. Trauma's one of those variables. No personality instrument is going to be accurate 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When did you decide to stop using the indicator or the instrument?
When I found it more useful to introduce 4 essential motivator patterns and do self-discovery with that and have them learn that as a language to talk about their differences, or to do 4 interaction styles in a workshop and have them look at that and discover their differences. If people insisted, because very often in an organization that language is around the Myers-Briggs, they would ask me to do the Myers-Briggs, and some of my colleagues will try to talk the client out of doing the Myers-Briggs because you can't do enough in a one-hour session or a two-hour session to be useful. For one-on-one sessions, I have an interview process. I ask lots of questions like, what did you always want to be when you grew up? I'm listening for things that you do when you're little, what comes easy to you, a whole bunch of things I'm listening for. I listen for a whole type, essential motivators, interaction styles, and intentional drivers, and the eight functions. I listen for those as people are talking. That just takes more experience as well.
Another difference between the Myers-Briggs type indicator and the InterStrengths approach is the material. You provide four different booklets. Mm-hmm. You can use those booklets by yourself, and you have a step-by-step to find out the preference. You often say that you are using them or mainly one of them during a one-on-one session.
The 16 personality types descriptions for self-discovery. Toward the end of that session, I ask people to read their self-portraits. There's a snapshot and an objective description that's also helpful for people. Those descriptions are based on 40 pages of transcripts, four people of each type, two men, two women, answering the question, what's it like to be you? And out of that, we got 40 pages of transcripts per type. I culled it down to 4 pages, and Dario Nardi refined it and got it down to 1 page. Sometimes I will have people have all four, depends on how extensive they want to go. But I will usually start with my interview process, and then maybe another time we'll talk about essential motivators, then we'll talk about interaction styles. We might even talk about intentional drivers, which doesn't have a booklet yet. They have the books, they can look at them, they can verify, they can say, aha, this really fits me. I tell people, keep sitting with it. You might decide something different after you live with it for a while. I don't think I have ever said in the last 10 years, well, you're this, or I think this is what fits you. Rarely would I say that. And it might be when somebody comes to me and says, you know, I've tried all of these on, could you please tell me what you think? And if I've worked with those people for a while, I can tell them, well, this one has a good chance of fitting. Never you're this. Mm-hmm. It's not my job. My job is to facilitate self-discovery, not to profile somebody and tell them all the things that are about them.
Which is not a difference with the indicator.
Right. Sometimes, especially when people are starting out and they're at the novice stage, having an instrument is helpful. It can give people some ideas. The caveat is don't give it at the beginning, because people will trust the test results.
How did you come with the idea to write those books?
There were the 16 types books that the Myers-Briggs company, then Consulting Psychologist Press, had. When you do workshops, the standard is you give people handouts. We created the booklets so that they could have some resources so that they could go and have somebody else read it and say, do you think this is me? So they could get feedback from others. They would have it. People keep these. They don't just take them and throw them away. They do a handout. And there are 16 descriptions in there. Personally, my experience has been that the pattern stays the same, but people will maybe relate more to one pattern than the other. Someday they also can say, you know what? I think this was my contextual self I was responding to because I took this in relationship to my work. You can have your friends, your spouse, read those descriptions. They could even discover themselves by reading them. It isn't as rigid as just getting a report.
Yeah, and there are some exercises also.
Yeah, there are a few exercises. There's a self-discovery exercise. One has some relationship questions. What do you dislike or like about the person that you mm-hmm. have mm-hmm. a disagreement with? How's it related to their type pattern?
The Myers-Briggs had for purpose to help people get a job during the recession. And
it was during World War II when they were trying to get people matched for their jobs. And yet the ethics of it are that you can never use it for hiring or firing or selection of any kind. But her purpose was so people would know themselves better so they could look at what they were doing It wasn't so that they could get a label that could be slotted into something by an organization.
What's the position of the interstrengths approach regarding job or career? Let's say career.
Well, if somebody wants to hire somebody for a job, you can look at the talents or the skills that are needed to do that job, and you can use information about the patterns in your job description. And that's especially true for temperament, essential motivators, or interaction styles. You can't give someone a test or even do a self-discovery process with them and then decide whether to hire them or fire them, because someone may have more skill than someone who doesn't have a particular preference in the thing the job's going to require, because they got to train. And maybe they're just one of those really bright people who can do almost anything, all kinds of reasons. For career choice, the value is to know, what are your falling off the log skills? What are the things that you just do naturally? What are the things that you enjoy doing? And what kind of pleasure does that bring to you? For example, I was a school psychologist. I was elementary school, kindergarten through eighth grade. I had to assess IQ tests around potential capacity and their skill level, and then make a recommendation to committee about whether the student should be in a special ed class. I had to do counseling and coaching for kids who were disruptive or having trouble. I had to explain things to parents. My core psychological needs were somewhat met, but not completely, because I had rules I had to follow that I didn't like. I had a graph with a diagonal line, and if the kids' results came above the line or below the line, depended on whether or not they got help. Then you put kids into a class where they have a label, they have learning disabilities, et cetera, et cetera. All of that kind of bureaucracy I didn't like. It didn't meet me because I saw flaws in it. So I wasn't using my talents, my strategic talents. I saw that things could go wrong and that they were going wrong. I liked helping people. I even liked learning about some different kinds of tests, like projective tests and things like that. But when I got budgeted out, and I thought, what do I want to do? I didn't want to find another job like that. I also thought, if I have to do therapy, because I was by then a licensed marriage family therapist, so I had to do therapy every day. I didn't want to do that either. But I did want to teach people about differences. I formed a company with my good friend to take that information to business and industry. Having my understanding of what my personality is like and what's really important to me helps me know what environments are going to be very stressful, likely to be stressful.
With the interstrengths approach, each book put the reader in a context. Essential motivator is about to find out what moves you. Interaction styles is how you do what you do. Cognitive dynamics is how you think about things. That's totally different of taking the instrument, because the instrument is a series of questions.
Yes, so the point here is that one key aspect of the interstrength approach is that it is multiple lenses, whether it's essential motivators, which is really how we're deeply motivated, core psychological needs, and talents that help us get those needs met. And that gives us a particular kind of information. Strategy, tactics, logistics, and diplomacy say a lot about it. You can be a physician and use diplomacy primarily, and that's the part of it that's the most satisfying. You could be a surgeon and have diplomacy be a key part of it once you've got the skills. Maybe you have a tactical approach and like working in emergency medicine to respond to the needs of the moment. When those core needs are not met, strategy, tactics, logistics, and diplomacy, we have severe stress. Mm-hmm. With interaction styles, that tells us how we interact with others. It's a lot about our primary energy and even the way we tend to hold our bodies. By knowing my interaction style that goes with my whole type pattern, that I tend to be behind the scenes means that, okay, that's why that job didn't work. Doesn't mean I can't do it or someone with my pattern can't do it. I'm not going to any place where I have to initiate a lot of conversation and I don't get enough information to integrate. I want an opportunity to integrate a lot of stuff. the cognitive processes tells me a lot about what I'm going to lead with and what I'm going to support with and where my developmental edge is. And then if you have this other lens called intentional drivers, that helps me know, in fact, it helps me know a little bit about how I tend to screw up because I'm constantly designing and redesigning and fixing stuff when maybe I could better spend more time writing a new curriculum for a class. You have much more information with this approach than you have from just the eight functions, if you want to look at that, or from any kind of instrument that doesn't give you the other pieces of information.
Yeah, you just have to accept to spend a little bit more time.
It's worth it because the end result is increased self-awareness, which pays off in many ways.
As we wrap up today's conversation on the Myers-Briggs types indicator versus interstrengths, it's clear that our understanding of personality is enriched when we move beyond labels and quick assessments. For practitioners and type enthusiasts, Linda reminds us that effective self-discovery is about unveiling, not confining, our true patterns. The MBTI, with its depth and research, offers valuable insight, but it's most meaningful when used as an indicator, not a final verdict. And as we've learned, real growth happens when we engage in a process that includes multiple data points, personal reflection, and opportunities for dialogue and adjustment. The interstrengths approach, with its self-discovery tools and multiple lenses, essential motivators, interaction styles, and more, empowers practitioners to guide others not just to a type code, but towards a richer self-knowledge. This process respects the complexity of each individual, embracing that best fit can only emerge through exploration, feedback, and openness. If you're working with clients or reflecting on your own path, let this episode encourage you to trust the unfolding of self-awareness. Use assessments as starting point if you want, not end point. Facilitate experiences, ask deeper questions, and invite people to try on patterns, like a pair of shoes, until the fit feels right. In the end, your practice will be more ethical, transformative, and attuned to real diversity of human experience. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this discussion, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and review to help others find the show. Remember to subscribe if you don't want to miss next week's episode. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Beyond Personality Types. Thanks again for tuning in. We are Olivier Caudron and Linda Behrens. Stay curious and eager to learn until we meet again in our next episode.